on this episode of Rebel Spirit Radio.
The thing that people aren't doing is they're not being responsible for themselves, and they're not being responsible for the fact they are creating their suffering. See, and most people don't want to hear that. I mean, I'll put something like that out and people end up defending their suffering. You know, it's like, no, I can't. You're misunderstanding. Okay. You're not understanding me. And instead of grasping what I'm saying, and I know from experience, I know as a fact, say, this is not a belief system that I adopted from somewhere. Now, this is not, doesn't come from psychology papers. Psychologists get it wrong a lot of times. I mean, a lot of times. Psychiatrists get it wrong. I mean, seriously. See, but, you know, they're doctors, so we have to respect that. All right. We give them some, you know, room. You know, they got the medicines. They got the drugs. See, but, you know, what I'm saying is, no, if you grasp what I'm saying, you can do something about it and really do something about it. Again, how do I know? Because I have done something about it.
Welcome to Rebel Spirit Radio, exploring the frontiers of spirituality, consciousness, the esoteric, and humanity's sacred relationship with a living earth. I'm your host, Nick Mather, and in this episode, I am joined by author Peter Ralston to discuss his latest book, Ending Unnecessary Suffering. Ralston explains the concept that much human suffering is self-created through mental constructs and societal expectations. He emphasizes the importance of recognizing and halting these self-inflicted mental activities to eliminate suffering. We also discuss how his ideas compare to Buddhist practice and virtue theory. Also, please be sure to like and subscribe to this podcast on whatever platform you use to listen to or view podcasts. Your support is truly appreciated. Peter Ralston is one of the founders of the consciousness movement that began in the San Francisco Bay Area, the birthplace for much of the personal growth work generated in the late 60s and early 70s. He has spent thousands of hours in contemplation and has had several powerful enlightenment experiences. In 1977, he opened his own center in Berkeley, California, the Chang Chin School for Ontological Research. Ralston's work at the school and his consciousness organization, Empowerment, contributed a powerful new direction, pressing for a deeper level of honesty and a more authentic approach than most so-called spiritual practices. In 1978, he became the first non-Asian ever to win the World Championship Full Contact Martial Arts Tournament held in the Republic of China. He is the author of several books, including The Book of Not Knowing and The Art of Mastery. He joins me today to discuss his latest book, Ending Unnecessary Suffering. Peter, welcome to Rebel Spirit Radio.
Okie dokie. Thanks.
Well, I'm very happy that you're here with me today. I finished reading your book yesterday, and you know, I read a lot of books for the podcast, and it's unfortunate that I can usually only read a book once, and I don't get to spend as much time with it as I would like. And I mention that because your book is one that I wish that I had more time to sit with and to maybe read a second time just to get a better grasp of what you're kind of presenting. But I found it really interesting, and I am looking forward to getting clarity from you to make sure that I understand what you're saying. But before we get into that, let me ask you if you could speak a little bit more about your background. I read the short bio, but I was just kind of curious if you could say a little bit more for the audience so they know what has led you to where you are now.
Well, the bio kind of covers it. You know, like it says, I grew up in San Francisco Bay Area back in the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, that kind of thing. And there was lots of stuff going on back then. I mean, look, I'm an old guy, all right? I might not look it, but I am 75 years old. And so I go way back, and there was, you know, it was a wide open investigation in many ways. I mean, there was, of course, the anti-war stuff that was going on. I was part of the university and the free speech movement and all that, you know, back then. But there was lots of, especially after the war thing ended, a lot of spiritual stuff, being just wholesale, just, you know, sucked in from mostly India and other places, Japan and China. You know, it's like just boom, lots of that stuff, new thought, philosophy, psychology, you know, some of the new psychological stuff, big guys were back there, you know, and then nest and other human growth things, mind changing stuff, blah, blah, blah. So I was a part of all that in various ways. And also, you know, is intensives, contemplation intensives in Zen and whatnot. And so I was deeply into it, and I did lots and lots and lots and lots of work. Not just the martial, but contemplating and whatnot. I mean, we're talking lots of work.
Yeah. Well, it shows in the book. And I was just kind of curious to get a little bit of a better grasp of who you are. What I think that I would like to do is kind of try my best to summarize what you are saying in your book, Ending Unnecessary Suffering, and then ask you to correct me or put in any other information. And we can go a little bit deeper in some of the things that you've written here. So okay. I'm going to do the best that I can. So if I understand correctly, what you're saying is that we typically, humans, we live in a world of concepts that are constantly running through our minds, and that often we're not actually experiencing what's real, because what we're doing is these concepts sort of mediate or stand in between us and what's real. And it's these concepts that we have that in large part create our suffering, and that we're the ones who are creating our suffering, mostly because it's for the most part these mental concepts that we get stuck in, and they appear, they're, I don't know, implanted in a variety of ways by society, culture, and our experiences. And so to end suffering, what we need to do is to not live through these concepts, but to live with, by being responsible for our actions and direct actions and direct reality. So I'm going to stop there and let you correct me and then see where we go from that.
Sure. Yeah. No, okay. That's fine. And I would suspect after, you know, given that I've worked with tens of thousands of people over the decades, people will not understand what you just said.
No.
They won't understand, you know, basically what I say. So let's give it a shot and I'll fill out some stuff. See, now when you say, first of all, we live through concepts, well, it's more than people think. And when you say, you know, we live through concepts, well, on the one hand, it's pretty self-evident, isn't it? I mean, just think about a day. Think about you right now. Stuff's going on in your mind, right? And throughout the day, it never shuts up. So that's not, should not be a mystery to anybody. See? And just like, okay, let's draw some attention to that, that your mind, you're talking to yourself, your images, your memory, your future plans, your work, etc. That just doesn't stop. You're always doing it all day, as long as you're awake. Mm. Okay. When you're under general anesthesia, it stops. When you're in deep sleep, it stops. But those are the only times. All right. So that conceptual domain, that there's an activity going on, hey, people should be able to get on board with that really quick if they haven't already, okay? If you haven't noticed that already, I would say, boy, you're not paying attention, okay? But, and everybody can get that. All right, now, what separates the wheat from the chaff here, though, is, you know, that stuff is important, and what's going on there is important. But there's a lot of mental stuff people don't grasp as mental stuff. They think it's just reality. They think they're just observing reality, or reality is inflicting itself upon them. See? And what I'm saying is, no, it's not. Every time you suffer something, I'm not like a broken leg, right? That's a different subject. But mental, emotional suffering, right? You know, like worry, depression, dissatisfaction, shame, you know, like blah, 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 you know, all the kinds of loneliness, Okay. Anyway, if I got everybody's attention, it's like, you know, can you find something in there? Okay. So now, because, you know, people got that stuff going on, right? And they suffer it. I mean, people get depressed. Some people get depressed frequently, you know, and if they live as if it's inflicted upon them, you see? They no choice. And then, you know, maybe they take drugs or they distract themselves or they, you know, binge some TV show and eat potato chips or whatever. You know, I mean, it's like they have their solutions, their remedies, and none of them are, they don't solve the problem. Okay. Because even when people get through their depression or whatever, and then they get happy because mostly they get distracted with something, you know, and they'll come back. Because they don't know how it comes. They don't know why it comes. Okay. Loneliness. Same thing. Now, loneliness, boy, that's rampant. You know, I'll bet there's not a person listening to me that can't relate to loneliness. Okay, maybe one or two on the planet. You know, but everybody else is like, yeah, no. I am lonely. And some, you know, sometimes I'm lonely, you know. But oh, I'm not lonely. I'm never lonely. I'm with my friends. I got kids. I can be lonely, you know. See, yeah, but you also feel kind of isolated and alone, right? You know, like, well, yeah, I mean, I got the kids, but I'm still living in this world here that, and I'm doing all this stuff here, and it's all by myself, you know, in this private inner world and whatnot, right? And I'm alone in there. I'm alone in here. I can't get out. All right. So, you know, I'm just doing a couple just to kind of ground our conversation. Mm-hmm. But now, here's kind of the point I would make at this juncture. You relate to the wall, right? And so much people relate to these concepts that cause worry, depression, something's missing, loneliness, whatever. They relate to them as if they're real, like a wall. Now, when you relate to a wall, you don't have much choice. You stop when you reach the wall, you know, or you bang your head in the wall, you see? But it's like the wall's pretty solid and there for you, right? See, but now people are living with these conceptual domains as if they're a wall, as if they're as real as a wall. And I'm saying, no, they're not. That's a hallucination, if you think so. You see, it's just that one, you don't own it, you're not responsible, and truth to tell, our culture doesn't help in that domain. You know, we live as if, no, all this is like just the human condition. Oh, it must go on, it must go on. And then it gets worse and worse and worse in that we cater to it. You know, no, you're not responsible, let me give you a drug. You see, and I'll help, you know, clear up your depression. No, you're not responsible. Let me give you some other drug. Oh, no, you're not responsible. Let's do this spiritual thing or this meditation. Or here's my five easy steps to, you know, clearing up your depression or whatever it is, you know. And people are doing these remedies. They don't work. See, and everybody who's worked on those things, no, they don't work. Some of them work temporarily. I mean, if you do the right drug, yeah, you're going to be, it's like your brain's going to change. Okay, yeah. You know, but it's a superficial remedy. And the thing that people aren't doing is they're not being responsible for themselves, and they're not being responsible for the fact they are creating their suffering. See, and most people don't want to hear that. I mean, I'll put something like that out and people end up defending their suffering. You know, it's like, no, I can't. You're misunderstanding. Okay. You're not understanding me. And instead of grasping what I'm saying, and I know from experience, I know as a fact, say, this is not a belief system that I adopted from somewhere. Now, this is not, doesn't come from psychology papers. Psychologists get it wrong a lot of times. I mean, a lot of times. Psychiatrists get it wrong. I mean, seriously. See, but, you know, they're doctors, so we have to respect that. All right. We give them some, you know, room, you know, they got the medicines. They got the drugs. See, but you know, what I'm saying is, no, if you grasp what I'm saying, you can do something about it and really do something about it. Again, how do I know? Because I have done something about it. All right. Okay. See, now I'm not trying to say, you know, cure all, you're going to enter nirvana. No, probably not. but you can stop all this suffering. Nirvana, that's a different podcast. All right. See, but you can stop this suffering. For example, the worry, the depression, that, you know, the something's missing, right? I'm incomplete, right? Mm-hmm. How many people have that? Pretty much everybody. Seriously. Right. Everybody has that. They have that there's something wrong with them. Something's broken. I'm not complete. I'm not whole. I'm not happy, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. And somehow I have to fix it. And I don't know how, but I think I know how, because I'm going to try to get money. I'm going to do the spiritual practice. I'm going to meditate. I'm going to get, you know, whatever, find a mate. Is it get a dog? I don't know. I mean, I'm going to do all these things I think might work. All right. And you'll get distracted for a while, but they won't work. They won't work. See, and why won't they work? Because you're doing it. And unless you stop doing it, it doesn't stop. Hmm. Nothing you inflict upon yourself, no attainment you get, you see, is going to do it. You know what I'm saying? You could become a billionaire and, you know, okay, good, fine. See, and you'll say, well, I don't feel I'm good enough. I don't feel successful. I'm not capable, you know, this kind of shit, right? Okay, so I'm going to become a billionaire and I'm going to show I'm worth something. I'm worth something, right? There you go. See, because I believe I'm worthless, you see. But I'll never be worthless. No, I'm going to prove I'm worth something. So I'm a billionaire. Well, what you will be, I guarantee you, is a worthless billionaire. You know, you'll be a rich, worthless billionaire. Okay, I'm saying. And for a while, your yachts and your planes will distract you. It's true. They will. And I promise you, they get old. It will get old. How long? I mean, seriously, you know, people who don't have yachts and jets, their own private jet, right? You know, they think, well, that would be the, you know, that'd be great. You know, I would love it forever. No, you won't. Seriously, you'll get seasick. You know what I'm saying? You'll get like, oh, shit, you know, another day on the damn yacht. Hmm. And I'm still worthless, you know, and now I'm lonely and seasick. You know, I'm saying, you see, it's never a cure-all. You know, like, have you ever had, like, you know, a hot tub or a pool or something like that? You know, anyway, anybody who's had a hot tub and pool usually know after a while, you know what I'm saying? Before you get it, it's like, oh, that'd be great. And for a little while it is, right? But how long can you swim? I mean, how long can you soak in the heat? and it gets old over time. You know what I'm saying? Anyway, I'm just saying, you see, these are not solutions. There is a solution. Boy, I don't usually talk like that. But anyway, I'll talk. But there is a solution, and it's stop doing the stuff that creates it. Right. See, now the key is finding the stuff that creates it. See, and that's where I go to, well, read my book.
Yeah, well, we want to go a little bit into it, but let me say a few things here for the conversation. One is, I could, as I was reading the book, I could see where some people may chafe a little bit at some of the things that you say. But I think often it's because there are some pretty hard truths that are being stated, and people don't like those truths. And I found myself thinking, doing a little bit of comparison, where it's not exactly the same as some of the ideas in, for example, in Buddhist thought. And there's also something that I kind of want to talk about towards the end here that I see being at least consistent with what you're saying. But, you know, our culture is set up in a sense to keep us in this sort of state, you know, because like what you said, you know, in terms of like the yachts and the hot tubs and the swimming pools and whatnot, you know, all advertising is based on that we have some kind of lack in our lives. And if we only had product X, then that would fill us up, but the whole system would fall apart if we're ever satisfied. So we're kind of kept in this constant state of dissatisfaction. And it seems that what, you know, we can stop that, you know, within our power to stop that, sort of dissatisfaction. But what we have to recognize, and I think this is one of your key points, so again, correct me if I'm wrong, is we have a tendency to identify with these things. So, for example, you're talking about like depression. What we do is we tend to identify with the depression, and we will say things like, I am depressed. And that's not necessarily true. I'll share this with you. I have, when I teach Buddhism, one of the things that I will have students do, and I think this is pertinent, is that whenever they feel like depression or anxiety, and a lot of students, a lot of people suffer from anxiety these days, what I ask them to do is to try, instead of saying, I am depressed or I am anxious, to kind of disconnect from it in a sense and say, there is depression. There is anxiety. Is that consistent with what you're saying, or am I going down a wrong path?
No, you're going down, you know, a fine path. Yeah. It's just not going to go far enough.
Okay.
Right. All that's going to do is create a little space. Yeah.
Right.
And so, like, you're using the words, which is great. You know, I am depressed, which, you know, somebody might think it has, you know, I am that, like, I am mm-hmm. depressed being.
Right.
All right. And that's stupid. Right. No, you're being depressed. Right. Like, I have a metaphor in another book about, you know, the difference between the activities you do and what you are. And I talk about the dancing rock. Hmm. That would probably be, I don't know where that is. Book of Not Knowing. I really don't know where that is. Anyway, one of the books, wrote a lot of books. You see, you're a rock, say, not a put down. Okay. But, you know, you're a rock. And you dance. Mm. See, now, when it comes to rocks, you're pretty clear on that, because rocks don't dance. It'd be very unusual to see a dancing rock. You see, but if the rock identifies with being a dancer, I am a dancer. And people do that. Mm. I am a dancer. No, you're not. You know, you are a person who dances. See, and that seems consistent with like what you're saying. See, mm. And so, okay, you're not dancing, or you lose the ability to dance. Great. You're still a person, you know, go on, do something else, whatever, you see, because, you know, you can't dance, right? See, instead, you'll get depressed. No, I'm a dancer. My whole life is now. Well, look, screw it. You're going to die. You're going to get old and die. You're not going to be able to dance forever, all right? So get over it. You talk about chafing. Yeah. I say stuff like that. People chafe all the time. Like, what? No, you are. This is a temporary thing. But my destiny, I have to become a dancer that lives into the future. No, no. Your legs are going to give out. Live with it. You know, I know for a fact. Anyway, yeah. You know, and you're going to die. See, this is, that's a, you're not thinking this through, is what I'm saying here. You know, say when you're a dancing rock. So yeah, changing that mindset is useful. Mm. Right? But, you know, and in case people think that what I'm talking about is like positive thinking, you know, just think positively, you know, no, does that work? Right. No. Well, a little bit, you know, obviously if you deliberately and willfully, you know, change your thinking a little bit, it'll change your mood, probably, you know, like a habit. But are you going to start thinking the same crap? Of course you are. And the background stuff, you don't change. So if you think you're worthless, and you won't admit that you're worthless, for example, you know, if you live that you're an isolated, alone entity, which you do, because all modern humans do now, you see, that won't change. A little positive thinking sprinkled in ain't going to change that, you see? And so you'll still have these so-called maladies. But what you don't recognize them as, well, you do. You recognize there's something wrong, right? See, like, you know, a malady, but you don't grasp it's something you're doing. Nobody can grasp that being isolated and alone is something you're doing. And I mean, mentally, in that little inner world that you live inside of, as if you exist in there. Mm. See, now we're coming around more to the Buddhist thing. Right, but you see, right. the Buddhist thing, now I never met Buddha, all right? You know, I've heard tell stuff, right? Which all secondhand, because, you know, he didn't write a damn book, and they didn't do recordings back then. Too bad, though. Wouldn't it be great if you could actually see him talk? You
Yeah,
know,
yeah.
I bet it'd be very different than what we think, you know. And I bet he doesn't have that coiffed hair he always has on the statues and shit. Anyway, I mean, who did his hair? You know, come on. It's
well,
always
my understanding is it's extra brain at the top, and that and I've also read that the curls are snails. I don't know about that
that's
one.
Disgusting. But...
Yeah, but there's something to the story. I forget what the point of the story was, but yeah, I mean, who wants a bunch of
snakes? It's like the Greeks always had that beautiful hair. See, but they didn't really. They didn't, you know, they were bald, you know, like you and I, a lot of them, they were had, you know, different kinds of hair, you know, but that was the style that everybody loved. So anytime a statue was made, they had that, do my hair like that, you know, doing like beautiful curls and stuff like that, right? Anyway, so I'm sure they did that with the Buddhist thing. But anyway, back to the reality of it. So in the Buddhist thing, right, a lot of times it comes down to, you know, desire, thirst, craving, you know, causes suffering.
Right.
Okay, great. Now, does desire cause suffering? Yeah, in a way, sure. But that's way too abstract, way too general, you know, and way too, how do you say, people ain't going to go for it for the most part, right? See? And so it's not, it becomes unuseful. You know, as a life philosophy, if you take it on, maybe has some use, right? Say like, oh yes, I got to give up this, like, you know, and like you're saying about these, like every advertisement is telling you, you know, you feel bad, we'll make you feel better or whatever. You know, we can give you something. Just give us money and we'll, you know, give you something, whatever, drugs, whatever it is, new car, whatever it is. And yeah, sure. Now we could get over that, say, but it's like, as far as like giving up desire, people aren't going to do it. Yeah. But when you start saying, if you start making like the beginning of the book, remember, stop putting your hand in boiling water. You see, and the metaphor of putting your hand in the boiling water because you desire something. In other words, because there's a diamond on the bottom there, right? And you don't connect the boiling water to the act of reaching for the diamond. As soon as you connect that, you'll stop reaching for the diamond. You know, probably pour out the water and get the diamond. But anyway. Because you're a smart guy. But in any case, you see, as long as you don't make the connection as a reality, remember I was talking about the wall. As long as these things live as if they're a wall in your body mind, and you have no choice, you're just a victim to them. And then what do? You end up excusing them and justifying them and explaining them. You know, you use pseudopsychology and how many people have PTSD nowadays? I mean, come on.
Right.
That was reserved for, you know, guys from war. And now everybody's got PTSD because they got a boo-boo when they were six or something, you know what I'm saying? Or whatever. I don't know. I think, you know, it just goes too far, you know? And like, if you start saying, no, everything's a disease, it's inflicted upon me, etc., you get nowhere. And then you have to fight it like a disease. No, it's not a disease. Wake the fuck up. It's not a disease. It's something you're doing. I'm saying, really, it's something you're doing. You're doing it. You may be ignorant and not know how you're doing it. So then I say, well, find out how you're doing it. See? Get that you're doing it. Find out how you're doing it and stop it. And you can do that. Stop having the mind formations, the assumptions, you know, the thought that's usually buried beneath the surface a little bit. I'm not saying go into your unconscious mind and dig out, you know, the cows from the ditch. That's a Dutch thing. Anyway, you know, or whatever. You see, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying you're actually doing it now. That's why you're worried. Mm-hmm. That's why you feel worthless. That's why, you know, whatever it is that's going on. That's why you're depressed. See, that's why you're dissatisfied, et cetera. If you stop doing that, now, most people will not want to stop doing that because they say that's just life. I have to. No, you don't. Yes, but if I don't, something bad's going to happen. No, it's not. It's not. Breathe. Relax. Okay? You know, give it a shot. All right? See? And you'll find, oh, nothing bad happened. I just stopped the pain. I just stopped the suffering. Oh, my goodness. I'll be darned. See? And then they're going to come up with, you know, but I can't control my mind. See, my mind is doing it to me. And then my comeback is, no, you're doing your mind. Say again, own it. Be responsible for your own self, your own existence. You say, you know, I understand you don't know how you came to be here, but that's another question we can answer in another podcast. You know, there's a lot of ignorance, okay? See, but don't separate yourself out from your body, from your mind, and stuff like that, you see? Get it as activities you're doing and stop doing the stuff that creates the suffering. So as you know, and I run into this, you know, you say, well, I can't stop my mind. Yeah, you know, you're probably right about that. All right. Thing, because your mind's going to keep going. Why? That's another book. Okay. Yeah. So your mind's going to keep going because it's essential for yourself. And because you, let's just do a little tiny ditty, because you think you are that. You say, you think you are that. You say, you think you are that. Kind of like what you're saying, you know, I am depressed or whatever, right? Saying, you know, you think you are the self. And you think you are the self-mind. You think you are the activity, and you're dependent on the activity. See, but if I say, no, you're not. You're not the activity, and you're not dependent on. Well, you, this image of, or this, how do you say, experience of being a self is dependent. But so what? It's not real anyway.
Right.
And I don't care about that. You do, I understand, but I don't. Okay. I don't care about it for myself. I don't care about it for yourself. Now, I'm not saying you should destroy yourself. No, you have no desire to do that. See? But I am saying that, yes, that activity itself doesn't have to produce suffering.
Right.
You just have to know what's what. And you have to, like you were saying in your recap there, your, you know, your summary, you have to separate out what I simplistically say is from isn't.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't is all the concepts you do, right? And I'm saying you're not going to stop that, you know, doing concepts, but you can choose the concepts you do. See, when you relate to is, what is biological life, for example, breathing, you know, it's like, you know, the rabbit. See, what is now present occurring? Okay. See, now everybody, if they focus on now and the present moment, you know, like you say, your Buddhist, you know, fantasy, you know, go sit by a babbling brook and meditate. Are you going to feel better? Yeah. I mean, unless you start doing stupid things with your mind, right? That's the only way, right? See, but if you focus on the babbling brook and you calm your mind and you meditate and you get in the present moment and you breathe, right? Don't you feel better? Of course, everybody feels better. Yeah. See, you feel good. See, but you don't know how to do that in your real life. Yeah. See, because you're dependent on, again, the circumstance and the fantasy, you know, that somehow the babbling brook and the breathing and the present. See, but when you become present, and even with the babbling brook, you're working on, you're moving in the direction of is, aren't you? You see, this is what is. This is. I mean, is just in an existential way. Objects existing, space existing, right? Again, we can go into what an object is, what a space is, but again, that's another book, okay? All right, see, but as far as suffering goes, you see, you separate that out and you go, okay, that's a different domain. Okay. And what I'm saying is there's no suffering there. Those books behind you, not one of them is suffering. See, that curtain is not suffering. Your microphone is not suffering. You follow me? I might could go on. You see, it's like none of that is suffering. Be like the fucking rock and you won't suffer. Now, nobody's going to, you know, go for that, but still, see. See, in other words, you know, what I'm saying is there is a part of existence that is not suffering.
All right.
See, now, if you grasp what that is, and you can be as if you can stop doing the stuff that you do that causes suffering, then you can end the suffering.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that came to mind while reading your book, and you don't state it like this, but I'm going to see if this is correct. In terms of these things like the identification and the doing of depression and anxiety and worry and the suffering in general, I think that there's the point that I want to make that I think you're saying here is, I'm going to phrase it as having is evidence of wanting. that there is a part of us that kind of wants these things, because if we have them, we obviously want them somehow. And it seems to me that when you talk about getting rid of desire, not in a abstract way, that it is in the sense of not identifying with these things as ourselves. The other analogy that I use for that is something that I'll say in terms of like meditation is, you know, like clouds in the sky, you know, especially, you know, dark storm clouds and things like that. We identify with those when we ought to be identifying with the sky itself. So I'm going to let you respond to that. And again, correct me where I may be going astray.
Yeah. See, now, okay, you're not going astray. Again, just not deep enough. In other words, see, what you're talking about is valid, right? Mm. But what you're talking about is changing state. Mm. I'm talking about eliminating suffering, changing state, because changing state is going to be temporary. So I'm saying, but I mean, if you somehow permanently identify in your metaphor, permanently identified with sky rather than the clouds, yeah, okay, you'd have a kind of a permanent change of state. That would be useful, right? See, but it's like, you see, in that other domain that I worked in, the Marshall, right? And I was really good at it, you know, world champion, full contact, all that stuff. I mean, ask this guy over here, he'll tell you. In any case, see, I have, for example, just your metaphor brought to mind. See, people would ask, you know, like being calm. Being calm is one of the principles of operating well in that domain. Okay. And it's like, yes, but all these things come up. I don't know, the worry, the fear, the anger, the offense, the blah, 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 you know, it comes up. Okay. And I have a hard time with that. All right. But then see, I go with the cloud thing. See, I say, look, think of all those things, you know, when you're going to fight, whatever, huh? All those things is like the ingredients, you know, the vegetables in the soup. And instead shift to the soup, you know, the soup itself, the liquid, so to speak. See, don't get stuck on the carrots and the broccoli and the, I don't know, the ham, whatever you got in there, you know, see, just let those float. Screw it. Oh, here's a thought. Here's a feeling. So what? You know, I'm busy now. Okay. Float around here. Do your thing, but don't bug me. And then you switch to the soup, so to speak, you see, and you're calm. Because there's nothing going on there. See? And then you can focus on, you know, well, the fighting, see, the activity that's in front of you. Now, I guess I didn't even think about it. I was doing another interview and, you know, somebody mentioned about the, you know, the Marshall. And it's like, well, does that help? And I thought, huh, maybe it does, you know, because I took it really seriously. You know, I mean, full contact, real fighting, mm-hmm. You know. You got to take it seriously. I don't mean, most martial arts are fake. Most of them are not very good. And most of it just pretending. All right. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about pretend fighting. I'm talking about real fighting. And so I took it seriously. So in learning how to control my mind, you see, in that domain might have helped control my mind in this, you know, emotional, mental domain. Later on, see, but in order to control my mind in that domain, when I was younger, I had to make a shift, like, you know, you're talking about a shift of state. And I do it for that reason. Say, when I'm going to fight, or when it's useful, or when I'm training, or something like that, right? See, but then in the rest of my life, I was as fucked up as everybody else, you know? I mean, oh, my woman left me, oh my God, now, death, okay, you know. You know, I suffered this, that, and the other thing, you know? Oh, I'm lonely. Oh, whatever, you know, blah, blah, blah. But then I stopped it on purpose. You know, I looked into it, see? Mm. You know, and stopped it. And that's why I wrote the book. It's like, right, it's right. People may want to know this.
You know? Yeah. Well, it also reminds me a bit of the Socrates saying, you know, the unexamined life is not worth living, because if we don't examine our lives and take responsibility for them, we're not really living our lives. We're living according to whatever has been indoctrinated into. or what have you. And it seems that this sort of self-reflection that is demanded here is something that most people just aren't necessarily doing. And again, it seems like it's probably because we have this false notion of self and that we're identifying with the wrong things.
Oh, hell, you know, yeah.
Yeah. The way I was thinking about, yeah,
in ways that you can't imagine.
Yeah. The way I was kind of thinking about what you're saying in the book is practice that I've done. And I don't know that I got this from anywhere. It's something that I just started doing many, many years ago. And it was, you know, I like to walk a lot. I especially like to walk, you know, as the sun is setting and at nighttime. And as I was out walking once, I thought, well, what would happen if, you know, instead of identifying things, and I think this is like the concepts that you're talking about, like, oh, there's a tree, because that's what we're constantly doing. We're constantly labeling everything that we're coming into contact with. And I thought, what if I just kind of tried to not do that and just experience everything as it is, without the concepts? And I find that it's an interesting exercise, but it's something that is difficult to maintain, because that voice that you're talking about, it always just comes running back in, and you have to be mindful of it and like, okay, no, wait, let's go back to this. Now, I don't know if that example is anything that is useful for what you're arguing here, but it's something that came to my mind as I was reading your work.
Okay. Yeah. Now, that's a good exercise, you know, by your attention. But then one thing to notice about that, because one, people aren't going to do that, you know, except as an exercise. See, even you're not going to do that except as an exercise. Why? Because you need to know a tree is a tree. You know, there's a reason for that. It's called you. And you surviving and stuff like that, see, living life, see, and you can't live life unless you interpret shit, because you don't know what to do, right? Again, that's another book. The good news is I got lots of books, okay? Yeah. In any case, so, but what I want to point out here relative to our discussion is none of that caused suffering,
right?
Not one of those trees, rocks, sky, clouds, whatever, caused any suffering, see?
So, yeah, and they don't suffer.
And they don't suffer, right. See, so then you ask, well, then what does? See? Yeah. And, you know, as you know, from the book, my simple thing, right? See, and if we go into specifics, I don't know if you have a question about like a specific, like, you know, I go through like, I don't know, what is it, about a dozen, you know, so-called maladies, mm-hmm. how they're created, as far as I can tell, and what to do not to have them.
Right.
See, but you have to think what I call existentially. You have mm-hmm. to think like about the existence of the thought, the concept, the reality that you're entertaining. Say, yeah, you know, like what you did with the tree, for example. Say, like, you know, okay, where does that come from? How did it become a tree? Say, and then you'll probably have other thoughts about what it is you're looking at. But maybe it's not a tree anymore, but there's something there. All right. Mm-hmm. Now, we could go into practice, you know, contemplative practice, whatever, and try to find out like what all that's about, which is useful. But again, as far as the suffering goes, nobody cares and nobody's going to do that, right? I mean, it's fun, it's interesting, you see, and you're probably not going to suffer while you're doing it, you know? See, but it's not going to address the issue. And what I am saying about the suffering, just about the suffering, I do a lot of stuff, all right? Okay, I mean, a lot of stuff, very deep stuff, okay? See, and that's why I like to be talking just about the suffering book, because then it's useful for people. Most of the stuff I do, most people are not going to find useful. It's too much of beyond the tree thing. You know, it's like, okay. And, you know, but I'm saying this is actually concrete, something you can do. You just have to grasp, you know, like, I don't know, but as simple as like, you know, like you're pinching yourself, stop pinching yourself. You see? If you don't acknowledge that you're pinching yourself, you can't stop it. And you say, oh no, it hurts, it hurts, it hurts. You say, oh, I'm pinching myself. I can't stop it. I need to. There's a gremlin in my cheek. I need to pinch or whatever, you know. Okay, give all that up. Stop pinching yourself. And the pain goes away. See, but this is a little harder than that, right? Because it's not that kind of action. know, it's a mental action.
Right.
I'm saying, and you have to grasp the mental action that you're doing so that you can stop doing it.
Right.
See? And there's, and like, I'm not saying stop thinking because you're not going to. I'm not saying stop mental activity and imagining or noticing trees as trees. I'm not saying any of that. One, because you're not going to. And two, there's no suffering there.
Right.
See, there's
right.
tons of stuff you can do where there's no suffering. See? It's just, unfortunately, Adam and Eve fucked it up. They didn't know they could make a distinction between all the crap that creates, you know, the suffering stuff and the stuff that doesn't.
Mm. Yeah. Anyway. Well, we can go through one of the, if you would like, a concrete example. We're getting close to the end. We've got about 10 minutes left or so. But what I've got is at one point in the book, you do list, I think, the four steps. Isolate the form of suffering you are enduring. So for that can be, you know, like the depression, the anxiety, the PTSD, what have you. Discover what concept or mental activity you engage that generates that form of suffering. And that's where you have to do the self-examination and kind of go deep into what's generating it, and then go deeper to discover what ideations you have created that make such mental activity seem necessary. And I think that maybe that's something that we haven't addressed, is this ideation, this idea making, and then eliminate both ideation and mental activity, and the suffering disappears.
Yes. If you do, you know, one or the other, the suffering will disappear. Yeah. But it's like, and this is going to seem like a jump, but in order to help, maybe it's not going to help. But see, like, sometimes I will say pain is a concept. Now, one of the reasons I say that is because when I say pain's a concept, everybody immediately jumps on board. No, 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 it's not. You're stupid. You know, it's idiotic. You know, pain is real. I didn't say it wasn't real. I said it's a concept. See, it's real like a concept's real. You say, you know, like say somebody, well, no, the concept exists. Yeah, but it exists as an activity, a mental conception. As you said, you know, an ideation, you know, something that you're imagining is true about reality. So you have to have a little openness, right, in order to do that. Like, no, it's not. How do you know? Well, if you don't have that thought, that assumption about reality, that experience doesn't occur. So you can't have an experience without that. Kind of thing. See, so okay, that seems abstract to people. So like pain, you know, like I tell people, you know, when I go to the dentist and I get my teeth drilled, I don't use Novocaine, right? I have not used Novocaine. This is in the past. And sometimes it's like serious drilling, deep drilling, right in, you know, blah, 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 root canal kind of shit. Say, and then I say, well, they say, what do? You just like, you know, you're so, you control your mind. And I mean, the dentists don't understand it. See, and they prefer the Novocaine, okay? You know, and they say, you know, I don't want you white knuckling this here and being macho. No, no, no. Trust me. No, no. It's not like that. I don't have to white knuckle anything, okay? See, because I realize how the mind creates pain. So now if I call it a concept, that just really, you talk about rankling people's feathers, right? See, it can't be concept. But if you consider, just relax a moment, you can have your pain. It's all right. Okay, you know, it's like you'll get your pain, right? You know, see, but if you consider the depth of what I'm talking about as concept, that somehow even pain fits in there. I'm not saying physiology doesn't occur. I'm not saying that, you know, the sensation doesn't occur because of the nerves. I'm not saying that. And so you say, oh, well, you're just saying don't call it pain. No, that's too superficial. I'm saying you eliminate the thing that you add to that that is pain. Just like you add to the tree, right? It's not a tree unless you add tree to it. You see? See, now most people go, oh no, it's a tree. Yeah, to you and I, it's a tree. To itself, does it call itself a tree? Huh? Go ask it. See, try to get into the mind of a tree. Now, if you want to end suffering, go there. Grasp the mind of a tree, right? And you will suffer no more. Okay, somebody's going to make up all kinds of shit about that. But anyway, okay. See, but you see what I'm saying? Now, if there's something we're doing with the mind, so most people think of concepts as superficial. And this is why I'm trying to say, no, No, that's not what I'm talking about. It's your whole experience here is basically concept. You know, thing. And you don't think of that as always superficial. You're having concepts, right? You're there, having a thought, having a conversation. I'm listening to blah, blah, blah. Okay. And, you know, there's more to your experience than that. You say you think you exist, you think as you exist as a self, et cetera, right? Say, okay. So if pain is somehow, I'm saying, a mind activity, that's something we're doing with the mind, with the brain, that adds this ingredient called pain, just like the tree or the rock or whatever, right? We add this ingredient. And if you don't add that ingredient, if you can control your mind, so-called, or you understand what you're doing, you experience what you're doing, so that you don't do that, then there is no pain. There is no pain. There are other distinctions being made. See, we're just talking about pain. That's all. You know, not sensation, not objects, not sky, clouds, trees, whatever. See, we're not talking about that. We're talking about pain. Okay, now suffering, one ingredient in all suffering is pain, isn't it? See? Every piece of suffering has some pain in it. It's different forms of pain. They right. feel differently, but you say it hurts in some way. Otherwise, you don't call it suffering. Yeah? All right. So now if pain itself is somehow a concept, right? I'm saying specifically, I'm not asking people to give up pain. I'm saying specifically the activity you're doing is kind of deep like that sometimes, like the ideation thing, see? That's why I said existential. Where does this come from in your experience? So you look into your experience and say, what in here am I doing so that I'm worried or whatever, depressed or whatever, see? You can find it because you are doing something. Stop doing it, it goes away. Yeah, so.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it also kind of reminds me of this idea of like with worry and anxiety, for example, is that it only increases our suffering, you know, because we're worrying and being anxious about something that is in the future and isn't here now. You know, right. It's all based on this projection of a future possibility and future state. And right. That's not what's real. What's real right. is that See, present moment.
That's right. And so let's jump on that one because people can understand that, I think, better, right? Mm-hmm. See, what's the ideation? Well, what's the activity? The activity is you must be thinking about something in the future, and you must be thinking about something in the future you don't want. Because mm-hmm. worry is a form of fear.
Right.
And fear is always doing that. Look at the big book of not knowing. And say. Anyway, and so it's something you don't want, right? See, now people can grasp that, yes? Because you cannot worry unless you do that. See, what's the ideation? The ideation is that there is a future, for one. Right. That the future is real, and that what you're doing now is necessary, right? See, and probably you think, if you're a worrier, that you have to do this so that you can prepare or avoid or, you know, take care of yourself or whatever. You're going to make a difference. See, likely not. You know what I'm saying? Action makes a difference. Right. Worrying does not. Okay. So if you want to get off your ass and make a difference, you know, like do something now that makes a difference. Yeah, but I can't, it hasn't happened. Okay. Then shut up. See, worry's not. Be aware of possibilities perhaps, but see, it's not like, you know, I do this thing about people say, well, I need fear, for example, you know, I mean, you know, like, okay, I'm walking along the edge of a cliff. Without fear, I'd walk off the cliff. No, you wouldn't. You know, see, are you stupid? You see what I'm saying? No, all you need to know is that if you walk off the cliff, you'll die. That's all you need to know. And you don't need any fear at all. Yeah, but that kind of causes fear in me. Well, don't walk off the cliff. See? Yeah. That's all you talk, you know, that's all you need to know. You see what I'm saying? You don't need the fear. The fear right. is when we're ignorant and we need a cattle prod of emotion to push us this way or that way, and we don't take no responsibility for our knowledge or our actions. You see? You don't need it. You know, and people walk on cliffs, don't have fear all the time. You know what I'm saying? I mean, people, it's just natural.
Right.
You know, in the Andes, they walk on cliffs, they're afraid all the time, right? See? Yeah. So anyway, you see the relationship there. See, now people can get that, I think. See, it's maybe new for most people, but you say, oh, really? So I don't need these things. to survive. No, you don't. You don't need them to survive. You don't even really need you to survive. But I go too far.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. Well, we're kind of at the end here. Do you have a minute so I can ask you one more question? Or
sure.
Would you? Okay. So towards the at the end of the book, you talk about excellence and mastery. And I know that throughout the book, you discuss these ideas of like goals and whatnot. But at the end, you kind of focus on these ideas of excellence and mastery. And what came to my mind, because this was one point where I was like, oh, nope, I think I disagree. Not in the sense that I disagree with excellence and mastery, but one of the things you wrote in the book was that when you were talking about these things, you're like, well, these are not, this is not a morality. And I was like, but it is. This is all virtue. And the idea of virtue is excellence. And there's this idea that, you know, virtue is connected to the notion of virtuoso. And you mentioned, you know, you have a list of things. And I was like, yep, those, you know, like honor and honesty and integrity, calmness. And I'm like, yeah, those are all virtues.
Alrighty. See, now, remember your tree?
Yeah.
Take virtue out of it. Mm. See? Just like you took tree out of it. See, you and I add the virtue part.
Right.
So say mastery, what is that? You and I make it virtuous. See? Or excellence or whatever, right? We make it virtuous. What is it without the virtue? What is it without the morality? Say, what is it without the status we think we're going to get? Blah, blah, blah. What is it doing? See, and that's what I'm talking about.
Right.
So what does it do? Like when you adopt that, even when you adopt honor, of course, honor is going to be seen as virtuous for sure. Right. And well, nobody pretty much knows about honor anymore because it's just an old antiquated notion. Yeah. See, but it changes you. Right.
Right.
It's just like being honest. Real honesty kicks your ass. What is honesty? What is honesty? Is it a virtue? No. We make it a virtue. And by making it a virtue, it keeps us away from it. You follow? Like your tree. Uh-huh. See, I got you on all these.
Well, no, not necessarily, because in my understanding of virtue is that it is, because I think that when we, and I could be wrong here, but it's something that you do. You know, to be honest, you practice honesty. To be honorable, you practice honor, right? To be integrity, you practice integrity.
Right. You right? Don't just practice it like you're practicing, you know, martial arts to get good.
Right.
You probably have to do that, right? With those things that you mentioned, because people aren't good at them.
Mm-hmm.
We're just kind of by default really bad at those. But you see, honesty is what honesty is.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't give a flying fuck about virtue. It doesn't give a flying fuck about you and me. That's the power of it. It's telling the truth. It's relating to the truth, whatever is true. You see what I'm saying? See? Mm-hmm. And so it kicks your ass because you don't. I'm not saying you personally. You know what I'm saying? See?
Yeah.
But even people like you and I, who are very honest people, probably aren't as honest as we think. See, and you consider what real honesty is. What is the principle? What's the principle behind it? See, that serves itself, not you. And that's where the power comes from. See, and so it's about, it changes your self-concept, obviously. It changes your experience of life, how you behave, right? Change, because you're aligning with some principle or other, you see? You know, like we talked about calm and fighting or something, you see? But again, you know, calm is not a virtue. It doesn't care. You and I make it a virtue. See? And again, that keeps us from it. By doing that, we're separating ourselves. You know, like I'm an honest person. You know, like you're, what do you call it? You know, I am depressed, you know? Mm-hmm. See, it's like, I'm an honest person. Yeah? Okay, good. So what? See? But I'm virtuous because I'm an honest person. Yeah, you're probably not as honest as you think you are. See? But you live your life consistent with being an honest person, okay? That's a character trait, see? Mm-hmm. Being an honest person and stuff like that, fine, okay? It's It's better in our society for us collectively, if that's true, as opposed to being a dishonest person, you see, or whatever. But the virtue is what we apply, see? And the honesty is what it is. See, and that's why I'm talking, again, the ideation, the principle. See, what is it for real? Not what does it do for me? Not how do I relate to it? Not how does humanity relate to it? See, not how does our culture relate to it? You get past all those things and you grasp what is it? You see? And that's where the power is. And like I said, a lot of my power is not overlooking the obvious.
Yeah.
And most people always overlook it.
Yeah. Well, like I said, your book is one that I wish I had more time to sit with and absorb as I was reading, and also to read it again, because I think there's a lot of incredibly valuable ideas in it to help us. And, I think that there's so much suffering in the world that anything that we can do to end the suffering is the right thing to do. So let me ask you, since we've
and again,
gone over.
Go
ahead. Oh, no, I was just going to ask you. You can add something if you want. I was just going to add the final questions I have for you. So if you'd like to respond.
No, let's go there, because I'd be useless.
Okay. All right. So what do you have? What are you working on next? What do you have coming up?
Oh, well, I have a new book that nobody's going to understand or like. It's called
Other Than the Unnecessary Suffering book.
Oh, yeah. Actually, the Unnecessary Suffering book was in this book.
Okay.
In the original iteration. And okay. I pulled it out, one, because this book I'm working on is too long already, right? Mm. And that made it mammoth. You know, like my Book of Not Knowing is 600 pages.
Wow. Yeah.
I'm a chatty Kathy. In any case, it takes a lot to try to see, there's so much in the way anyway, to try to move people. And I always try to move people, their experience, right? Mm-hmm. See how the realizing things, not just believing me, not believing anything, but actually change because of it. And that's difficult. In any case, the new book's called Whereof One Cannot Speak. Mm. So, you want to go beyond Buddhism? There you go. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's serious, but it's a different domain.
Right.
It's beyond your tree thing.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I tried to do that once, to not believe anything. And that was a interesting experience too. But I also still try to do that and recognize that there are multiple perspectives to things, and to recognize that I have my own perspective, and that isn't necessarily true.
It's not true. It can't be true by definition. Right. Read my new book. It hasn't come out yet. I'll tell you.
Yeah.
It can't be.
When it comes out.
But then again, it might be great. It might be useful, powerful. Yeah. But it can't be true.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'd like to read your other books. I think I may have a copy of The Art of Mastery somewhere, so I have to double check on that. So where can people go to find out more about you and your work, Peter?
Sure. Easy answer. My name is Peter Ralston. And maybe you have it on your thing there somewhere. But Peter Ralston, R-A-L-S-T-O-N. Anyway, just go to peterralston.com.
Okay. Perfect.
I'm a .com.
Yeah. Okay. Wonderful. Well, Peter, I thank you so much for your time today and the discussion. And again, I want to say that I really did enjoy the book and would love to find the time to give it a good second reading, just to absorb a lot of what you're saying and try to better understand it. So I appreciate all of your effort today and trying to help me, and I hopefully the audience as well. And I hope that we've piqued their interest in your book and your work.
Well, I hope it is. Yes. I hope it's helpful for them.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me on.
And that's a wrap on episode 202 of Rebel Spirit Radio. Thank you so much for listening or watching if you're part of my YouTube audience. As always, if you enjoyed this episode, please hit that like button if you're watching on YouTube, and don't forget to subscribe to the channel and click that notification bell. You can also follow Rebel Spirit Radio on whatever audio platform you use for listening to podcasts.
Right now, I'm nearing 20,000 downloads on the audio platforms, yet I only have 12 followers, and one of those is me. It only takes a second to like, follow, or subscribe, and it's totally free, and it really does help. Putting together this podcast is a labor of love. I put a lot of effort and time into each episode, and I hope you find value in it. And if you do, I hope you can find it in your heart to send a little love my way. With more subscriptions and followers, it could possibly get some sponsorship, and honestly, having some funds come my way to help with equipment, hosting, and other necessary subscriptions would be really helpful. You can also help by joining my Patreon at patreon.com/rebelspirit. The link is also in the episode description. You can also buy a super thanks on YouTube to help support my work. As I always say, I'm here in the front range now doing missionary work in regards to religion, spirituality, and ecology, consciousness, and the esoteric, and how all of this can help us heal humanity's sacred relationship with the living earth. So if you feel moved by the rebel spirit, and you know, I sure hope that you do, then please, by all means, help me in my efforts to share the good news. I'm Nick Mather, and you've been listening to or watching Rebel Spirit Radio. Until next time, may you be in peace, may you flourish in all possible ways, and may you continue to nurture your rebel spirit.